You know, I don't believe, I need to tell you that this world is filled with hatred, rage, evil. Wednesday of this week, both houses of Congress were in session, and all the circus is going on around that about who's going to object and who's going to do what and all of that. And all during all that, the Capitol building was literally attacked by an unruly mob. Now, the last time that the Capitol was attacked on such a large scale was in 1814 by the British when they burned it to the ground. And you watch the news this week as it was happening, and it was actually a pretty intense period of time. You know, our lawmakers, the media, our nation. Indeed, you had governments all around the world were in shock. They're shaken to their core. I was reading an article this week that something very similar to this actually happened in Germany in August of this past year. You had a group of people that were sick and tired of all the lockdowns and the mandates that were placed on them. And they tried to storm their version of Congress. They were actually pushed away. But, I mean, you're seeing this happening. And see, you're seeing this evil. I saw a report this week where they stated that this was a level of anger that has no place in our culture. And yet there it was. Right there for all of us to see. And if what we've seen in the past few days is any indication, I'm not seeing that anger going away anytime soon. Are you? Now, we're told that in the end time, godlessness is going to become rampant. That people at that time will begin to exhibit certain characteristics. Among those is brutality. It's a lack of self-control. We're certainly seeing that at this time. Over the past year or so, our news reports have been filled with all kinds of stories of these outraged mobs hurling vile accusations, death threats at people that they simply disagree with. It's amazing, isn't it? We're losing all sense of respect, all sense of mutual concern. When you look at it, most of what counts for news today when you turn it on is basically who said what mean thing to someone else that they can disagree with. You know, and if there isn't anything obvious or blatant, they'll take a snippet of something and they'll twist it all around and then they'll jump all over it as being evil. That's what counts for our news. So how can human beings, every one of us is made in the likeness of God, how can we be so full of hatred and evil toward other human beings? Other human beings who are also made in the image of God. One reason is that they have a very futile and darkened understanding of who and what a human being actually is. Let's start today in the book of Genesis. Genesis 1. Genesis 1, verses 26 and 27. This is early in the account. This is at the when man is being created. Genesis 1, verse 26. God said, "Let us make man in our image, according to our likeness. Let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, over the cattle, over all the earth, over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth." So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created him. Is that what our society believes today? Our schools, our media, our government has swallowed a whopper of a lie. They actively promote that lie. The lie is that human beings are nothing more than a highly functioning animal. Not at all endowed with any spark of the divine. But, you know, as we came crawling up out of the goo, and by blind chance, you developed language, culture, science, self-consciousness. It's all by chance. And so what's the consequence of that kind of thinking? Does it really matter who and what we are? How does that do any harm? But you know, the result that we're reaping from decade after decade after decade of such foolishness, the result of that is brutality. In fact, there are many political, popular political, and social movements afoot that promote the idea of human beings as being a plague on this planet. They're what's wrong with this planet. We're called evil, something to be eradicated. For example, think of global warming. Some of the hatred out there is even done in the name of God. But it's also done with a false understanding of God as well. Let's go back toward the back of the Bible now. James, the book of James. James 3. James 3, verses 5 through 9. James 3, and starting in verse 5. Talking about the tongue here. And James says, even so, the tongue is a little member, and it boasts great things. See how great a forest a little fire kindles. And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. The tongue is so set among our members that it defiles the whole body, and it sets on fire the course of nature, and it is set on fire by hell. Verse 7, for every kind of beast and bird, of reptile and creature of the sea is tamed and has been tamed by mankind. But no man can tame the tongue, for it is an unruly evil, full of deadly poison. With it we bless our God and Father, and with it we curse men, who have been made in the similitude of God. Again, what I was talking about earlier, how can we, all made in the image of God, hate one another? And we see that so much of the hatred that we're seeing today in this world, all around the world, gets inflamed by words. Spoken words, written words. It's what people are saying. Today, though, these words, these thoughts are being magnified. They're being intensified by social media and also an irresponsible broadcast media. Many hurtful, stupid things even are being said. And it could be attributed to this missing dimension of understanding. You know, instead of screaming at each other, we need to stop. We need to realize all of us were made in the image of God. And no one is better than anyone else. Book of Matthew now. Matthew 5, verse 21 and 22. Matthew 5. And let's start reading in verse 21. Says, you've heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not murder. Whoever murders will be in danger of the judgment. But Christ goes and expands on that. He says in verse 22, I say to you, whoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of the judgment. Whoever says to his brother, Raca, shall be in danger of the council. Whoever says, you fool, shall be in danger of hellfire. See, that's what people are doing. And Christ magnified that to say that if you're angry, it's very same as murdering. So we need to understand that our fellow human beings are also made in God's image. Every one of these people has tremendous potential to be a part of God's family. That knowledge should guide how we perceive and treat one another. Our words, the anger that we have, can be considered the spirit of murder, as it says here. It's only going to lead us to destruction. Could we be so deceived? Jim Franks, in his special member letter, the one we got yesterday, I just want to pull out a couple of sentences. He said this. He said, the United States as a country is being tested by this outcome, or what happened on Wednesday. But he said, so is our Christianity. Because of the strong feelings being exhibited, it could be easy for us to fall into some of these same attitudes of anger and division if we're not careful. And that's truly the case, isn't it? I had specific feelings, very strong feelings, as you're watching these things unfold as what's going on. And it's not wrong to have those kind of feelings. To fall into those feelings, though, isn't right. And so, yes, we can be deceived into joining in with all the chaos that's going on around us if we don't guard our hearts. the talk, the thinking, the activity that I've been describing is of Satan. It is inspired by our adversary. He's the adversary not only of us, but of all of humanity. He hates humanity. And so we have to ask a question, why? Why would Satan hate humanity? Let's go to the book of Hebrews. Hebrews 1 and verse 14. Hebrews 1 and verse 14. Talking here about angels, as it says in verse 13. But in verse 14 of Hebrews 1, it says, "Are they not all ministering spirits sent forth to minister for those who will inherit salvation?" Ministering spirits. It means the angels of ministry or ministering angels. God created specifically the angelic realm. And he assigned to them specifically a role of being a ministering spirit. When that first got started, that also included Lucifer. The angels were just part of the infrastructure that God has created, that he has put in place to facilitate his plan. The plan to bring many children, sons and daughters, to glory. Angelic beings sometimes serve as messengers. But we're told here their primary day-to-day responsibility is to protect and to serve human beings in our physical environment. They are to be ministering servants. Let's go back now to the Old Testament, Isaiah 14. Isaiah 14, verses 12 through 14. Let's continue to expand on this. Isaiah 14. And starting in verse 12, it says here, talking about Lucifer, it says, "How you have fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning, how you were cut down to the ground, you who weakened the nations. For you have said in your heart, I will ascend to heaven, I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will also sit on the mount of the congregation. On the furthest sides of the north, I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High." Now we know that Lucifer, when he was created as one of three archangels, at least that we're aware of. Apparently, archangels are very powerful and high-ranking officers within the angelic realm. And we know Lucifer was one. The other two that we know of are Michael and Gabriel. But somewhere along the line, Lucifer came to the point where he no longer wanted to accept his role in the plan of God. He was dissatisfied with being subordinate. He didn't want to be under the authority of God. He didn't want to be that ministering spirit that he had been created to be. So it became the purpose and design of Lucifer to set himself up and his laws then as supreme, above those as God. He wanted to replace God with himself. So he rebelled. As we know, he convinced a third of his fellow angels to go along with him. Now, Lucifer is simply known as the adversary or Satan. And we're never told, we don't know for sure, but when you begin to understand Satan's desire to be exalted, how would he have felt when he came to understand God has as part of his plan to create spirit beings, and they're going to begin as physical human beings, and that they would then have the opportunity to enter into the family of God? They would become children, heirs, brothers with Jesus Christ, and that he and the other angels would have to serve them. See, as Satan, he hated God. He didn't want to be under God's authority. And so, by extension, God's creation also has to be hated. Go to Hebrews. Let's go back to Hebrews now. Hebrews 2, verses 5 through 9. Hebrews 2, starting in verse 5. Starting in verse 5, he says, "For he has not put the world to come, of which we speak, in subjection to angels." So again, the angels are not created to rule in the coming world. "But one testified in a certain place, said, 'What is man that you are mindful of him? Or the son of man that you take care of him? You've made him a little lower than the angels. You have crowned him with glory and honor and set him over the works of your hands. You have put all things in subjection under his feet.'" We read that back in Genesis. He was to have dominion over everything. Continuing on, "For in that he put all in subjection under him, he left nothing that is not put under him. But now we do not yet see all things put under him. But we see Jesus, who was made a little lower than the angels, for the suffering of death, crowned with glory and honor, that he, by grace of God, might taste death for everyone." Christ came. He showed us. He served as that example. He was made lower than the angels. Now he's back at his rightful place at the right hand of God. Romans 8 and verse 16 and 17, it tells us that we are children of God. We are heirs of God, joint heirs with our elder brother, Jesus Christ. 1 Corinthians 6 and verse 3 tells us we will judge angels. We are going to be over the angels. So we understand that human beings are destined to be given authority over the angels. We don't have it at this time. I think Satan rebelled at God's authority. To know that he'd also be under the authority of God's created human beings, that certainly has to get to him. That has to lead to his rage, his intense hatred, his consuming jealousy and envy of us as human beings. Now, the human family is modeled after the God family. It's a physical representation of everything that God has in store for human beings. And Satan hates it because God created it. So while we're still in this human flesh, this family unit provides multiple object lessons that we can, when done correctly, help us to understand God's intention for all of us. For example, marriage, where you take two and you meld it into one. Conception, birth, inclusion, loving authority, safety, security, unconditional love, loyalty, faithfulness, growing to maturity, receiving an inheritance. All these things are godly principles. They're modeled in the human family structure that we have today. Satan is intensely jealous of our future. Now we're as human beings, but our future is to be a very, very part of the family of God. See, he has selfish ambitions to be more than that ministering spirit. And he hopes to do this end run around the entire structure of God's family design. And he wants to declare himself to be like the Most High, exalted and worshiped. That's where he is. So the human family is a physical representation of the very system that Satan dreams of overthrowing, that he dreams of replacing. Our family unit, every time we have a family, it represents that. So should we be surprised that Satan attacks the institution of the human family? And it's bad enough now, but the pressure is only going to intensify. You look at it, some of the most contentious issues facing our society today are matters of family. You know, how easy it is to get a divorce. Cohabitation, abortion, unnatural relations between the sexes. What is and what is not defined as marriage. All these things, they're all family issues. Then you have a tidal wave, political, legal strife, confusion about gender even. And just a downright perversion has been unleashed on our society. And it is all specifically designed and engineered to attack and to undermine the biblical model of the family. This past week, I don't know if you saw this or not, leaders of the House of Representatives passed a rules package for the 117th Congress that included a proposal to use gender-inclusive language. Did you hear this? It has actually passed, from my understanding. It calls for the elimination of gendered terms such as father, mother, son, daughter, brother, sister, aunt, uncle, nephew, niece, husband, wife, father-in-law, mother-in-law, stepfather, stepmother, stepson, stepdaughter, grandson, granddaughter. You can't say those things in Congress anymore. Such terms are going to be replaced with parent, child, sibling, parent's sibling, sibling's child, spouse, parent-in-law, step-parent, stepchild, grandchild. Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Rules Committee Chairman James McGovern stated that this overall package included sweeping ethics reforms. It would increase accountability for the American people, make this House of Representatives the most inclusive in history. That is a blatant attack on the family. And it's occurring at the very highest levels of our government right now. I saw this week where there are also several other state legislatures that are also considering some of the very same rules. So it's only a matter of time as it all rolls downhill before we're told that we have to do such things. So again, is it possible that we too might be deceived by these tactics? Yes, it is possible. So as we're seeing, the biblical teaching about the family is coming under increased attack. And it's only going to get worse as time goes on. What goes on in popular culture will seep into the church if we allow it. Some may be called to stand up for the truth on this matter. And it's possible that may be you and I at some point in time. You know, and I hear of all these conspiracy theories. And I don't know about you, but when I hear of all these things, I find it hard to believe that any one person or even a group of people has the ability to orchestrate what we're seeing today. They may have started with something in mind, but it totally blows beyond their comprehension. I believe it's the God of this world. And he's working. He's pulling here. He's poking there in order to create the most chaos. He has in place a very powerful, a very far-reaching organization. And it's all working invisibly behind the scenes. Let's go to Ephesians now. Ephesians 6 and verse 12. Ephesians 6 and verse 12. And this comes, he says this right before he gets into the armor of God. So he's kind of setting the stage here. But in verse 12, Paul says, "For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against rulers of the darkness of this age, against spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places." Think about it. That's quite sobering. You see all the anger and everything that's going on, and you realize that's not it. That's not where the real evil and anger is coming from. It's telling us here that all government, religious, education, media organizations are under the control of, they're under the influence of, Satan. Albert Barnes, in his Notes of the Bible, says this for this term, heavenly places, because you think that that would be heaven, but it's not. He says that the phrase here is neuter plural, whatever that means, but he says it's the neuter plural use of the word, and it means here the sky, the air, represented as the seat of evil spirits. This is the illusion here. The evil spirits are supposed to occupy the lofty regions of the air and thence to exert a baleful influence on the affairs of man. So all around us, that's where we're seeing this influence. Go now to James. James 3, verses 14 through 17. James 3, starting in verse 14. It says, but if you have bitter envy and self-seeking in your hearts, do not boast and lie against the truth. This wisdom does not descend from above, but is earthly, sensual, demonic. For where envy and self-seeking exist, confusion, every evil thing are there. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality, without hypocrisy. Barnes again, he's of this, of the phrase here, bitter envy and self-seeking. He says it refers to a fierce and unholy zeal against one another, a spirit of ambition and contention. Adam Clark calls it an unkind, fierce, and contemptuous spirit. But Barnes goes on, he says, the wisdom here referred to is that carnal or worldly wisdom which produces strife and contention. That kind of knowledge which leads to self-conceit, which prompts a man to defend his opinions with overheated zeal. He further states that within this wisdom there is learning, shrewdness, tact, logical skill, subtle and skillful argumentation, making the worse appear the better reason. In other words, twisting evil around to make it appear to be good. And he goes on, but he says, all this is often connected with a spirit so narrow, bigoted, and contentious as to show clearly that it has not its origin in heaven. That was the intention that James wrote. It's as if he was watching the news with us today, isn't it? When he wrote this, it's pretty amazing. Ephesians 2, verse 2, calls Satan the prince of the power of the air. You know, over the years, I remember Mr. Armstrong, even years ago, he used the definition, something we could grasp, like a radio signal. You know, something goes out that's invisible, but it can be received. That's how he defined it. That's a thought here in this verse in James. Notice again that those that inhabited these heavenly places, he talks about principalities, which are evil spirits, which are demons, powers. And he's talking here about the specific powers that are granted to these demons by Satan. He goes on, he says, rulers of the darkness of this age. Darkness is an emblem of ignorance, misery, and sin. Also consider that a ruler of darkness implies a kingdom of darkness. And finally, on the last one, spiritual hosts of wickedness, again, are evil spirits. That's where Satan and his demons dwell. They exert great authority over this earth at this time. In Romans 13:1, we're told there is no authority except from God, and the authorities that exist are appointed by God. And so you have to realize Satan does not have unbridled control. He can only do what he's allowed to do by God. He's given a box. He cannot go outside of that box. For example, we know of Job. Remember the book of Job? Satan had to come to God and ask permission to do these things in order to try Job. We were already in Genesis. Let's go back again to Genesis 1 and read verses 26 through 28. Again, I want to look at it from a different aspect. I want to bring out a different aspect of it here. But Genesis 1, starting in verse 26. You know, God said, let us make man in our image, according to our likeness. Let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, over the cattle, over all the earth, over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. Then God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply. Fill the earth, subdue it, have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, over every living thing that moves on the earth. Notice when God made man and woman, right at the very beginning, he gave them dominion, authority, rulership over the entire planet. They were to multiply. It says they were to subdue, they were to rule over the earth. Mankind was designed for that from the very beginning, was given that authority by our very Creator at creation. As you know, when they were created, they were innocent, they were naive. But God was there to provide the guidance, the government, the support for them. From the very beginning, God was teaching His children to wield authority. Think again, Satan hates all authority except for his own. And when man was created, Satan had authority at that time. The authority that had been given to him, his box had been set for him. And so Satan has authority, and man comes along and he's given authority. However, Satan is able to drive a wedge between God and his children. And you have to ask yourself, why would God allow such a thing? You know, if he's in charge of everything, why would he allow it? It's called free moral agency. God wants us, every one of us, to love him as a choice of our own accord. We want to. Not because you have no other choice, that you're somehow forced into it. So at the creation event, humanity allowed Satan a position of influence over their thinking. They allowed Satan in. They invited him in. See, Satan cannot force a human against their will. However, he's got a lot of influence. He can push, he can pry, he cannot force you to go anyway. That's why he's called the God of this world, the prince of the power of the air. So mankind still has dominion over the earth. We occupy offices of authority. You know, in this country, for example, like president or senator or mayor, offices of authority. But Satan influences. He deceptively manipulates according to his agenda. And you look at it, and human in governments do often display characteristics of Satan. How many governments throughout history have you seen that have oppression, tyranny, war, strife, mass execution? But at the same time, they also display certain godly characteristics, don't they? You can have public decency, order, law, loyalty, security, things like that. Those are godly principles. And so what we see is human government is this mixture of good and evil. We want some of the things of God, but at the same time, we want some of the things of Satan. But most importantly, we want the freedom to choose how we're going to do that. Choose for ourselves. Which way are we going to go with this? Last Sunday, Mr. Petty references the opening of the new session of Congress. Representative Emanuel Cleaver, who's from Missouri, good old Missouri there, he was asked to give the prayer opening the new session. And I listened to the entire thing. It's on YouTube. He spoke for about 3 minutes. He asked for God's guidance and direction in leading the country. It wasn't a bad prayer by any means. I mean, you listen to it, he invoked the name of God and the Lord multiple times. It sounded appropriately religious. And then, when he finished his prayer, this is how he finished it. He says, "We ask it in the name of the monotheistic God, Brahma, and God known by many names, by many different faiths, Amen and Awoman." You know, that he took a lot of heat for his phrase, Awoman. You know, one of the best ones I heard is he's a moron for saying that, but it's just, and you see the articles after it, he claimed it was in jest. He said it was to draw attention to diversity that they have in Congress. So he started out praying to God. Then he concluded his prayer by asking it in the name of whatever God you want. And then he ended with a joke. Let's go to Psalms. Psalms 2. It's a short psalm. I want to read most of it here. Let's read. Start with verses 1 through 5. Psalms 2, starting in verse 1, starts with a question. "Why do the nations rage and the people plot a vain thing? The kings of the earth set themselves and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord, against his anointed. saying, let us break their bonds in pieces, cast away their cords from us. He who sits in the heavens shall laugh. The Lord shall hold them in derision. Then he shall speak to them in his wrath and distress them in his deep displeasure. Drop down now to verse 10. Now therefore be wise, O kings. Be instructed, you judges of the earth. Serve the Lord with fear and rejoice with trembling. Kiss the Son, lest he be angry and you perish in the way. When his wrath is kindled but a little, blessed are those who put their trust in him. See, that it shows again this mixture. Human governments, they want to be free from God and his authority. What we're seeing here, though, is God still has a voice. He still counsels. He's still active among them. See, God actually acts at times to restrain humanity, to hold them back from going too far in areas that would have led to their own destruction. And I'm sure that in the future we're going to find out how many times, how close humanity came to destroying themselves before now. But God somehow nudged it back away from the edge. Satan is bent on the destruction of mankind. He's called a murderer, a destroyer, because he leads humanity away from the path of life. He's out to destroy our future. You know, in ancient times, it was quite common when a new king came to the throne, what did he do? He'd find he would kill any of his family that could possibly overthrow him. Anybody that could possibly claim that throne from him, he had them killed. If his father was still living, it'd be his father, his brothers, his uncles. You read throughout history how many times they did that. That's exactly what Satan is trying to do. He's attempting to do the very same thing. He wants God's throne. Anyone of that family must be destroyed. 2 Thessalonians 2. 2 Thessalonians 2, I'm going to read verses 3 through 10. Second Thessalonians 2. And starting in verse 3. He said, let no one deceive you by any means. For that day will not come unless the falling away comes first. And the man of sin is revealed, the son of perdition, who opposes, exalts himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he sits as God in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. Do you not remember that when I was still with you that I told you these things? And now you know what is restraining, that he may be revealed in his own time. For the mystery of lawlessness is already at work. Only he who now restrains will do so until he is taken out of the way. In verse 8, and then the lawless one will be revealed, whom the Lord will consume with the breath of his mouth and destroy with the brightness of his coming. The coming of the lawless one is according to the working of Satan, with all power, signs, and lying wonders, and with all unrighteous deceptions among those who perish, because they did not receive the love of the truth that they might be saved. Paul's writing here to the church at Thessalonica. I mean, you could take this passage and you could plug it into the book of Revelation, couldn't you? Same sort of concept. We're seeing that one of the scary features of the end time is that this restraint that God has is going to be lifted. Now, Satan's not going to have unlimited power, but his box is going to be expanded. At some point, God will allow humanity and Satan to act with impunity, to do whatever they want. And we know from the book of Revelation that time's going to be short, it's going to be destructive, it's going to be terrifying. And it's going to be put to an end by the return of Jesus Christ before Satan is able to completely destroy all of mankind. Let's go back now to the book of Daniel. Daniel 10. Daniel 10. Read verse 20 and 21. just kind of speaking, part of the backstory, there was an angel that was trying to get through to Daniel, and there had been a delay. And finally, he's able to get through. And that's not important to what I'm bringing out here. But notice in verse 20, "Then he, the angel, said, 'Do you know why I have come to you? And now must return to fight with the prince of Persia. And when I have gone forth, indeed the prince of Greece will come. But I will tell you what is noted in the scripture of truth. No one upholds me except Michael, your prince.'" We're given a glimpse here into Satan's organization. It would appear here, from here, that Gentile nations each have what's called a prince. It's a demon. It's a high-ranking demon that are assigned to them. You see, the prince of Persia at that time did not want this messenger angel to get to Daniel. And he mentions a prince of Greece. That's also a demonic figure in charge of the nation. And he also describes Michael, who he calls the prince of Israel, your prince. Now, we know that Michael's not a demon. So we know that he's one of those archangels of God. So we realize that he must be part of these forces of restraint that make sure that box upholds its integrity, that the authority does not escape what's given. This is a top level of Satan's organization, but it reaches down to every level of human society, especially at its control points, like in the government, in the economics, the media, the education. So are we now experiencing the removal of God's restraint? Is that happening at this time? Galatians 6 and verse 7. Galatians 6 and verse 7. Very simple statement here, very direct. In verse 7, Paul says, "Do not be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatever a man sows, that he will also reap." To be mocked. Says to turn your nose up in scorn, to kind of thumb your nose at someone. You know, while the events this past Wednesday were horrendous, I could not help but think of this verse. And you're not going to hear this from anyone in the media, but consider this. This week, a prayer was offered up in the House of Representatives that was blatantly offensive to God. Mocked him. New rules were introduced to rip away any semblance of the family structure. And then, 2 days later, isn't that amazing? 2 days later, Congress was attacked by an angry mob. Such a coincidence? People won't even go there. Our leadership was thumbing their collective noses at God. As Paul says, God is not mocked. Is it possible he's grown weary of this nation's evil ways? Is it possible that the restraints are now being lifted? It's a sobering thought, isn't it? The only thing standing in the way of Satan and him accomplishing his agenda are just very few things. For example, like God, Jesus Christ, the church, and the human family unit. We know God's going to lift his restraining hand. We know that Satan is going to war against the church. He's going to prevail. What about the family, though? You know, even in cultures that are unbelieving, the institution of family provides some protection of and by itself from the destructive work of Satan. You don't realize that, but God designed it. The family unit just by itself offers some protection. The love of a father and a mother, the bonds of brotherhood and sisterhood, loyalty, affection. If we have stronger families, we have stronger schools. You have stronger churches. You have stronger communities with less poverty, less crime. The family is the linchpin of society. It's the building block, the fabric of any successful civilization. the breakdown of the family, the loss of respect for the human family, the confusion that is being sown into our human family at this point in time about marriage, about human sexuality, responsibility, about authority. When you begin to roll over on these areas, you're coming to the point where you accept the coming brutality and violence, because that's what happens when you break down the family. Human beings then become open to the idea of a powerful, materialistic state taking place of the family. Don't worry about it. We'll take care of you. We see evidence of that happening in this country right now, don't we? But the Bible speaks of one last all-encompassing state that it calls the beast. Let's go review that in Revelation 13. Revelation 13, verses 4 through 9. Revelation 13, starting in verse 4. So they worshiped the dragon who gave authority to the beast. And they worshiped the beast, saying, "Who is like the beast? Who's able to make war with him?" And he was given a mouth, speaking great things and blasphemies. He was given authority to continue for 42 months. Then he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God, to blaspheme his name, his tabernacle, and those who dwell in heaven. And it was granted to him to make war with the saints, to overcome them. And authority was given to him over every tribe, tongue, and nation. All who dwell on the earth will worship him, whose name have not been written in the book of life of the Lamb, slain from the foundation of the world. If anyone has an ear, let him hear. Notice here at this end time government as it comes on the scene, you see this wonderment, this admiration for this government. They're going to take care of us. Notice how many times it mentions through here authority. Great authority is given. But again, as we read earlier, it's authority that's only given by God. That box will be expanded. It's only given to ensure that God's plan is going to be fulfilled. Again, we see this government, this end-time government, is going to be a government of mixture. Notice it says, speaking great things, promising wealth, promising prosperity, honor, pleasure, ease, even the prospect of heaven itself. At the same time, there's going to be blasphemy against God and anyone associated with God's truth, anyone associated with his way of life. That includes the family unit that God designed from the very beginning. It is not the church's job to fix human society. I think Mr. Franks makes that quite clear in the letter that he wrote yesterday. Matthew 5:14 tells us we're to be the light of the world. It is our job to provide that light in the darkness. An example. We can show an understanding and practice of being a proper family. We can show those around us what a proper family looks like. One verse earlier in Matthew 5, we're told that we're to be the salt of the earth. Salt is a preserving agent. It keeps things from rotting. We are to be that. You can also relate that to the family. We should be able to preserve the family unit. So knowing that, what should we do? See, as a member of God's church, it is our role, it is our duty to stand up for the family. Are you a wife, mother? Your number one priority is to build your family, teach the children what the true family really means. Let them learn about God through the beauty of a godly family. Older women are told to teach, to encourage the younger women. Teach them the valuable lessons of family life, of child rearing, respect, authority, discipline. Are you a husband or a father? Our number one priority is to love your family. Provide for your wife and children. Teach your sons and daughters what it means to be a family. Provide them a positive model of love, authority, respect, responsibility. Let's go to Malachi. Malachi 4, verses 5 and 6. Malachi 4, verses 5 and 6, the last two verses of the Old Testament. And in verse 5, "Behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Lord." That's at his second coming. Talks of a prophet that's going to be coming. "And he will," what? "Turn the hearts of the fathers to the children and the hearts of the children to their fathers, lest I come and strike the earth with a curse." God is looking to the family to preserve something good, something worth saving for when the day of Christ really comes. That family unit is going to be there. It is for our sake, it is for the sake of the family, that the terrible days that are going to be prophesied to come, that they will be shortened. Or Satan would destroy everything and everyone. Satan will accomplish his goal of being worshipped at that point in time. But as we know, his time will be cut short. I believe Satan's purpose of presenting himself as that alternative to God, the Father, is intimately tied to the war he has on the human family. In order to overthrow God, he's overthrowing that very basic unit. Often, quite often, it bothers us when someone doesn't like us. You ever run into that, into somebody who just doesn't like you? That's because we like to be liked, don't we? It's a very human thing. Make no mistake, Satan hates humanity. He hates anyone associated with God's truth. He hates the family unit. He hates each one of us. And I don't think we truly comprehend the breadth, the scope of his hatred toward us. Anybody that's standing between him and his goal. Right now, we're seeing signs of increasing evil, anger, hatred. It's frightening. It's easy to get caught up in it. So what can we do? For final scripture, let's go to Amos 5. Amos 5, verses 12 through 15. Amos comes after the book of Joel. He's one of those tucked in there before Obadiah. Amos 5, verses 12 through 15. This kind of gives us a grounding, if you will. Amos 5, starting in verse 12. He says, "For I know your manifold transgressions and your mighty sins." God is talking here to the nation of Israel. He says, "I know what you've done." Here's part of what they've done. "Afflicting the just, taking bribes, diverting the poor from justice at the gate." Notice verse 13. "Therefore, the prudent keep silent at that time, for it is an evil time. Seek good and not evil, that you may live. So the Lord God of hosts will be with you, as you have spoken. Hate evil, love good, establish justice in the gate. It may be that the Lord God of hosts will be gracious to the remnant of Joseph." Talking again to Israel. Notice here, those that are wise, those that have understanding, those with a godly wisdom will recognize the evil. They're not going to become involved in it. Notice, seek good, hate evil, love good. We read earlier in James 3:17 where it defined godly wisdom as first pure, then peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and of good fruits, without partiality, without hypocrisy. That's where our head, our hearts, our attitudes must be. Things are getting interesting, aren't they? How it's going to go from here is anybody's guess. You just truly don't know. We're simply going to have to sit around and wait and see. It's amazing to me how quickly things change. You know, Tuesday, there was some tension that was building. By Wednesday evening, wow, the world had shifted on its axis. Things change very quickly. But the one thing I see out there, things are not getting any better. They're not changing for the better. So we need to keep our heads down, our eyes and ears open. We need to watch, pray always. Recognize the evil, the anger, the hatred that is being pushed on us by our adversary, Satan the devil. We need to take this time to shore up our relationship with God. We must preserve, promote, protect the truth, the church, and our families.